This is the Run At Sports. Oh boy, I can't say that. This is the Run At Sports Show. And I am Jane Lester, reading from Sports Illustrated from August 23rd of 2019. Open season. Storylines, the big three, Serena's record quest, Coco's schedule, around 2019's final major. By L. John Wertheim. You perhaps thought that tennis was an individual sport, featuring head-to-head matches. But the most gripping theater in the sport, or in all sports, we would submit, is a race among three men. The Derby pitting Roger Federer, 20, Rafael Nadal, 18, and Novak Djokovic, 16, against each other to see who can win the most major singles titles is also a de facto battle for the title of men's tennis GOAT. That the three most accomplished male players of all time compete contemporaneously means that we have the good fortune to regularly witness their greatness. It also means that every major now comes freighted with historic importance. And the margins are impossibly slim. Last month at Wimbledon, Federer held match point against Djokovic in the fifth set of their spellbinding final. Federer reared back and hit a serve that appeared destined to be an ace. The ball whizzed through the air, but suddenly, as if to say, "Nah, I'm good over here, thanks," clipped the top of the net and fell on Federer's side of the court. The crowd sighed. Djokovic exhaled. And then he won the point, and the game, and ultimately the match. 7-6, 1-6, 7-6, 4-6, 13-12. The next leg of tennis's great race, the 2019 U.S. Open, kicks off on August 26th in New York. And the state of the slam standings is only the most obvious tournament storyline to follow. Herewith, 10 pressing questions. Can Djokovic win over the field? Right now, the hottest stock in tennis is unmistakably Djokovic Inc. The Serb has won 4 of the last 5 major titles and hasn't lost to Nadal or Federer at one since 2014. Federer's balletic tennis and Nadal's lefty spin-heavy game are instantly appealing to the casual fan. Djokovic's style is more of an acquired taste, but he's just as devastatingly effective, and maybe more so. He's the best returner in tennis. His ability to cover the court is extraordinary and unrivaled, which allows him to extend rallies and make opponents aim for smaller targets. He can all but bend spoons with his mental strength. At his best on hard courts, Djokovic comes to Flushing Meadow as the top seed, the defending champion, and the betting favorite. But not the crowd favorite. Can Djokovic win over the public? There are, of course, no majors held in Switzerland or Spain, but Federer and Nadal routinely feel as though they are playing home games, so consistent is the crowd's support for them. Then there is Djokovic, who unmistakably lags in the popularity rankings, while the best explanation is that he arrived late to the scene, after fans had already professed their allegiance for Federer or Nadal. The subject of Djokovic's persistently middling approval ratings in the face of surpassingly excellent tennis remains a talking point. Some athletes would profess indifference to this, or even embrace the role of WWE-style heel. Not this guy. Djokovic, and this is no knock, eagerly he craves affection. As Nick Hyrios put it earlier this year on a podcast, I feel like he just wants to be liked so much that I just can't stand him. Maybe another U.S. Open title will endear Djokovic to the New York crowd. If not, he has some coping mechanisms. At the Wimbledon final, when the crowd rooted vocally for Federer, Djokovic convinced himself otherwise. When the crowd is chanting, "Roger, Roger," I hear, "Novak, Novak." It sounds silly, but it is like that. What's Serena Williams' mindset? She won the first of her 6 U.S. Open titles 20 years ago as a 17-year-old. But Arthur Ashe Stadium has been the site of many disappointments as well. Serena was 2 matches from winning the 2015 Grand Slam when she tightened and lost crushingly to unseeded Roberta Vinci. Last year, Serena reached the Open final and was on the precipice of tying the all-time mark for major singles titles with 24 when she lost, strangely and controversially, after being penalized a game for calling the chair umpire a thief. You can, and many do, still argue over whether to attribute the defeat to Serena's lack of impulse control or to the umpire's lack of swallow-the-whistle discretion. Still, stuck on 23, Serena would pull off the ultimate exorcism if she were to win her 24th major in September. But she's almost 38. She plays too sparingly. Since her return in the spring of 2018, after giving birth to her daughter Olympia, she's reached the finals in half of her 6 majors, but has dropped them all. Then again, sepulchres are filled with the bones of those who have doubted Serena through the years. Whither, Naomi Osaka? At the 2018 U.S. Open, Osaka, then 20, played valiant power tennis and kept her nerve in the final, defeating Williams and winning her first major. She then backed it up by winning the 2019 Australian Open, becoming number 1 in the process. Since then, wins have been hard to come by. Same for motivation and happiness, as Osaka herself concedes. In a recent lengthy Know Thyself Instagram post, she conceded, "Whenever things go wrong, I blame myself 100%. I have a tendency to shut down because I don't want to burden anyone with my thoughts or problems. I can honestly reflect and say I probably haven't had fun playing tennis since Australia, and I'm finally coming to terms with that while relearning that fun feeling." Here's hoping she recaptures the fun feeling in New York. Who's with Coco? Since her Wimbledon breakthrough, Coco Gauff, the prodigy from Florida, has not improved her singles ranking, currently number 140. That's hardly a condemnation of her tennis. Only 15, Gauff is severely hamstrung by the WTA's age eligibility rules, which restrict the number of tournaments she is allowed to enter. Following one too many unfortunate collisions, the policy was created as something of a traffic light, placed at the 4-way intersection of youth, fame, pressure, and money. C. Capriati, Jennifer et al. Despite good intentions, the policy has come under fire for A. restricting a talented young athlete's ability to capitalize on said talent, and B. adding pressure to those scant opportunities when teenagers can play. Gauff, who won a WTA doubles title on July 29th in Washington, D.C., will be greeted with great fanfare. We'll see how she handles the spotlight at what might be the last pro tournament she enters in 2019. What of the other 125 players in the men's draw? At Wimbledon, the big three, in keeping with ritual, all reached the latter rounds. Meanwhile, the players ranked 4, 5, and 6. Dominic Thiem, Alexander Zverev, and Stefanos Tsitsipas each lost in the first round. No current player under 30 has won a major. Why have none of the young, or for that matter, middle-aged, guns broken through? Explanations are manifold and not mutually exclusive. The best of five format favors the big three, giving them more opportunities to summon their superiority. Their relentless winning has demoralized everyone else. Andy Murray's mother, Judy, a savvy tennis observer, has even gone so far as to suggest that because the big three did not grow up with iPhones, they possess greater powers of focus and healthier relationships with social media. Whatever, we're getting restless for a challenger. Will Nick Kyrgios come to play? For all the debate and disagreement in tennis, you can carve out consensus here. The most talented men's player under age 30 is Nick Kyrgios. The problem is that Kyrgios hasn't figured out what to do with his talent. Sometimes the 24-year-old appears to be destined for number one, at least when he defeats one of the big three. Other times he plays with a complete indifference to the match's outcome. At last year's US Open, fans were treated to the bizarre and surely unprecedented sight of a chair umpire giving Kyrgios a mid-match pep talk and encouraging him to try harder. This year, Kyrgios has incurred fines, including $113,000 for outbursts in Cincinnati on August 14th, and pulled out of the French Open because clay sucks. He has also won two tournaments and played a can't avert your eyes level. Can Simone Halep continue to shine in the shadows? At 27, Halep is a decade younger than Serena. She's not outrageous or inconsistent or confessional on social media. She plays with a subtle mix of offense and defense and moves gracefully, but will not blow many opponents off the court with power. So it is that the Romanian gets very little attention. Which is a pity, because she's thoroughly professional, thoroughly pleasant, and, oh, right, has also been the best WTA player over the last 3 years. When Halep won Wimbledon in July, dismantling Serena 6-2, 6-2 in the final in less than an hour, she assured herself entry into the Tennis's Hall of Fame. She'll now try to win her second straight major and her third since June 2018. Can doubles continue its ascent? When the Tennis Salon considers its 2019 Comeback Player of the Year, it might want to focus not on an athlete, but on an entire discipline. For a long time, doubles has been the sport's great undervalued asset. But lately, the format is enjoying a renaissance. Plenty of stars are realizing the virtue of playing alongside a partner. For instance, Ashley Barty pairs well with Victoria Azarenka, a former number one singles player. Tsitsipas and Kyrgios recently played together in Washington, D.C. The ultimate pairing may have come at Wimbledon when Serena Williams played mixed doubles with Andy Murray. Want to work on your volleys or second serve under match conditions? Here's a way to do it while getting paid. and if the players benefit, so do the fans. Can tennis get out of its own damn way? Tennis is rather like a swan, elegant and regal above the surface, unseemly and ungainly below. As the players execute their duties on the courts these next 2 weeks, the sports administrators will be locked in conference rooms at the tennis center and in Midtown Manhattan hotels, trying to chart the future. The ATP is looking for a CEO after its previous head was the subject of a coup, orchestrated largely by Djokovic and board member Justin Gimelstob, who was facing a charge of felony battery at the time. He since pleaded no contest and resigned his board spot. The International Tennis Federation is holding its presidential election with ethical questions swirling around the incumbent. The USTA also seeks a new executive director, pitting outsider candidates against insider candidates. Tennis's congenital dysfunction is as predictable as the excellence of the Big Three, and neither show signs of abating. A Life Remembered, Cedric Benson, 1982 to 2019. One of the most prolific rushers in college football history, Cedric Benson died on August 17th in a motorcycle accident in Austin, where the 36-year-old had become a Longhorns legend in the early 2000s. A four-year starter, Benson rushed for 5,540 yards, second only to Ricky Williams in Texas history, and still ninth all-time in the FBS. As a senior in 2004, he averaged 152.8 yards per game. His regular season low was a 92-yard game against Oklahoma. And in his collegiate final, the Consensus All-American and Doak Walker Award winner helped the Vince Young-led Longhorns to a thrilling 38-37 win over Michigan in the Rose Bowl. 3 months later, Benson was drafted fourth overall by the Bears, beginning his rocky NFL career. Injuries and clashes with management plagued his three seasons in Chicago, which came to an end after he was arrested twice on an alcohol-related offenses in a five-week span in 2008. He landed in Cincinnati, where he put up three 1,000-yard seasons. But after two more arrests, a one-game suspension for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy, and a brief five-game stint with Green Bay, Benson finally walked away from football in 2012. "We've coached a lot of tough players," former Texas coach Mack Brown wrote on Twitter, "but none were tougher than Cedric. He was a true spirit." Flipping out. We asked a physicist to break down the jaw-dropping triple-double that's three twists, two flips Simone Biles landed at Nationals. The launch angle was 71 degrees. The launch speed was 14.7 miles an hour. The maximum height above the floor was 9.5 feet. The horizontal distance covered while in the air was 6.5 feet. The average impact force was 382 pounds. The simple answer is no. Simone Biles does not defy the law of physics. Even if slow motion replays of her newest skill might make it look that way, she may, however, be approaching the limits of human performance. Analyzing the video of Biles' incredible tumbling pass, David Young, a professor of physics at LSU, roughly calculated what it might take for a gymnast to go a step further. Given Bowser's hang time is approximately 1.3 seconds, to fit in a theoretical third flip and make it a triple-triple, Young estimates her launch speed would need to reach 22.6 miles per hour. That is 8 miles per hour faster than her estimated speed on this pass. If Biles wanted to add a twist instead to make it a quad-double, tuck, she would need to be in the air about 0.43 seconds longer, which would equate to a launch speed of 20.1 miles per hour. And even then, she'd need to slow her rotation rate to land on her feet. As a point of reference, Florence Griffith Joyner's top speed when she set the world record in the 100-meter sprint was about 24 miles an hour, and it took her 50 meters to get there. The diagonal length of the floor exercise mat is less than 56 feet. So unless Biles can find a way to flip or twist more quickly or gather more speed while within the confines of the mat, her triple-double just might represent tumbling's peak. Red, white, and new. With USA basketball's top stars skipping the FIBA World Cup in Beijing, fresh faces will lead Team USA in its last big test before the 2020 Olympics. The FIBA World Cup is August 31st through September 15th on ESPN. Although it doesn't quite pack the spectacle of Olympic competition, the FIBA World Cup in Beijing should provide a welcome appetizer before NBA training camps begin in the fall. Yes, Team USA will be without several prominent names, such as Anthony Davis, James Harden, and others who opted to rest before the NBA season. But with Kemba Walker, 26, and Donovan Mitchell leading a new-look roster, there's plenty at stake for the Americans, most of whom are making their senior international debuts. There's also star power across the board, such as Greece's Giannis Antetokounmpo, the reigning NBA MVP. The Americans are favored, but the World Cup isn't just about winning a third straight gold medal. It's also a chance to impress before Tokyo 2020. Peanut, not brittle. Retired NFL cornerback Charles Tillman is training to row 65 miles across Lake Michigan. Charles Tillman's hands are rough and scratched. There are twin calluses at the base of his middle and ring fingers, like a pair of mountains rising from his palm. He paddles his left oar over and over and over again, fighting a strong current that's keeping him from reaching the harbor. Tillman retired after a 13-season NFL career 3 years ago, and his trademark move, the peanut punch, a quick right jab he'd used to knock the ball away, helping him force 44 fumbles over his career, never gave him tough hands like these. On September 2nd, if weather allows, the former Bears cornerback will row 65 miles across Lake Michigan from St. Joseph, Michigan, to Chicago's 31st Street Harbor to raise money for pediatric cancer research and to support families with critically ill children. He's teamed up with marketing exec and fellow philanthropist Jake Beckley to create Row for Kids, which combines their individual foundations to raise money. Tillman was inspired to start his nonprofit, the Cornerstone Foundation, after his daughter Tiana had a life-saving heart transplant when she was 5 months old. They're hoping to persuade 650 people to donate a dollar each for each of the 65 miles across Lake Michigan. Yeah, my butt goes numb after an hour and a half, and I have blisters, Tillman says of rowing. But it's nothing compared to what these kids go through when they have cancer. Beckley already rowed across Lake Michigan once by himself, and the trip was so difficult that he swore he'd never do it again. This time, he and Tillman decided to build their own boat, Hope's Journey, 22 feet long and 5 feet wide. Tillman will sit in the bow to set the pace, Beckley in the aft to set the direction. I don't want to be responsible for us rowing the right way, Tillman says. A chase boat will follow, stocked with tools they can't fit in the rowboat. Extra batteries, bolts, wrenches, and most important, a hot sandwich for Tillman. I can only do snacks for so long, he says. Tillman currently works for the FBI, but he isn't allowed to discuss his job. All he can say is that when he walks on shore after around 20 hours on the lake, he'll need a day off work to recover. Rowing might look easy, but Tillman quickly learned otherwise. It's more difficult than I thought, he says. Here's how the longtime cornerback prepared. With early workouts, Tillman rises at 5 a.m. to work out. He spends 2 hours on Concept 2 rower, moved to his patio to practice in heat and humidity. He'll also do 2 10- to 15-hour lake sessions. He does targeted weights. He's mostly stopped weight training to focus on rowing technique, but when he lifts, he chooses exercises to target his hamstrings and lats. And for perfecting his form, he didn't realize how in sync everything had to be. The sequence of putting it all together, legs, core, arms. He's learning from the coaches at the Chicago Rowing Foundation. This has been Jane Lester reading from Sports Illustrated, August 23rd, 2019, for Ron Art Sports Show. Thanks very much and have a great week.